Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends, I'm just trying to save you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to put days like today into context so you understand them. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. When the bond market's in charge, you aren't going to make much money in the stock market because bond owners are pessimists, real glass half empty guys. And the bond market is certainly in charge right now. See, today we saw exactly how pessimistic they really are when they overlooked very weak consumer confidence data and averted eyes from an amazingly weak Chicago Purchasing Managers Report, 17-month low, both signs that we're making progress in the fight against inflation. Instead, they focused on a slightly hotter than expected employee wage figure. The results? Bond yields moved up slightly and the stock market got annihilated. The Dow tumbling 570 points.
Sell.
S&P plunging 1.57% and the Nasdaq plummeting 2.04%. April of 2024 will now go down as the worst month for the Dow since September of 2022. Good riddance. Now we're on the verge of a Fed meeting tomorrow that will no doubt show that Jay Powell wants to keep interest rates up higher for longer because the popular perception is that the economy isn't weakening. Notice, I put it that way, popular perception, because I see brown shoots all over the place. What are brown shoots? They're the opposite of green shoots. You want to see green shoots when you're hoping for the economy to bounce back from recession. I made up the term brown shoots because right now we want a slower economy so that the Fed can eventually start cutting interest rates rather than looking like bozos for taking more rate hikes off the table. So we are looking for brown shoots everywhere, like those weaker consumer confidence numbers and the Chicago PMI figures from this morning, or perhaps the miserable numbers from Starbucks tonight, big company, and filing them away as brown shoots that remind us that the Fed needs to keep rate cuts on the table. And remember, they are the magic elixir for stocks going higher. Ever since March 8th, we've got a much hotter than expected employment number looking at us. We've been worried that the Fed stopped tightening too soon. It's not a coincidence that some of the greatest stocks of the year, like Nvidia, peaked and fell that particular day, because nothing's more important to the broader economy than employment. If it stays strong, then we probably have to have more rate hikes. If Friday's April payrolls report is weaker than expected, though, there's a very good chance that all this negativity about stocks will go away again. Wall Street wants weakness because it will mean the Fed was right and rate cuts are on the horizon. But there's no bridge from here to there, which makes things more fraught than we imagine. Take the indicators today. When consumer confidence nosedives, as we know it now did, and when the Chicago PMI goes down so much, normally we wouldn't even bother with this employment cost index. The bond guys I deal with told me that the employment cost index, the one that rose 1.2% when people were expecting just 1%, was a suddenly important indicator, all important, that Jay Powell had mentioned a couple of times as significant, as if somehow the PMI or the consumer confidence numbers don't mean it's much anymore. I think that's ridiculous. What truly matters to this market is that we've got plenty of investors who are still clinging for or holding out for a whole bunch of rate cuts this year. And until they give up on that idea, they're going to keep dumping stocks anytime we get one piece of strong economic data, no matter what it is. Oh, it's a tough needle to thread. Consider this. We had two very weak numbers today, one relatively strong number, even though that strong number hadn't really been mattering before, and suddenly it was enough to cause real havoc. In fact, it was so bad today that the real standout stocks were the perennial loser cannabis plays, because DEA plans to recommend that cannabis be reclassified as something less risky. The star of this whole session was Canopy Growth, my favorite pot stock, so to speak at least, which was up a stunning 78%. Sure enough, Eli Lilly had a great day on a terrific quarter related to the sales of the GLP-1 weight loss and diabetes drugs. 3M gave you a long-deserved upside surprise, even as it came with a dividend cut. But for the most part, the bond market crushed the stock market yet again. Now, I want to step back for a moment and tell you how I see this meltdown. First, it's the end of the month, and money managers like to sell stocks en masse at the end of a month that's been bad. So we might actually be wading through some sort of technical morass that we don't even know about. Second, with consumer confidence for April falling to the lowest level since July of 2022, that's more likely going to produce a softer set of retail numbers, something the Fed very much wants to see. Consumers get negative for a bunch of reasons. It could be the college protests that dominate headlines. It could be the fraught presidential election. Or it could be because people are suddenly worried about keeping their jobs. And that's something that may weigh on Friday's non-farm payroll number if it's weak again, the ultimate brown shoot. Third, today's weak Chicago PMI number could be a sign the U.S. economy juggernaut may have run out of steam, or at least isn't as operating as hot as it's been. Again, another huge brown shoot that jives with what we heard from some of the railroads and trucking companies, which I regard as great barometers of the future. Now, the big downer here is that no matter what we do, we keep hearing that inflation's raging. We ignore that Walmart's coming out with a new line of house brands that are cheaper and can help push down costs. We don't seem to notice that we're now getting some weird numbers from companies that deal, say, with car parts, numbers that say that people aren't putting in for insurance claims because insurance is already too expensive. The rising price of insurance happens to be a huge source of inflation. We've got some commodities that are plummeting, too. Today's victim, including cocoa. Remember, I told you that thing was going to just break. Cotton, coffee, even oil seems to be stabilizing for the moment. But we have nothing promising when it comes to shelter, the other major source of inflation. And we have anecdotal information like that of Coca-Cola, which put through big price increases. It didn't hurt sales. We are going to talk to Coca-Cola's James Quincy later in the show. All these indicators point to one thing, though. The Fed may need to leave rates as high as they are for a time, which is not great. But remember, a couple weeks ago, many people were arguing that the economy was so strong the Fed needed to hit us with more rate hikes. I'm sure Jay Powell will get a question at the press conference tomorrow that sounds something like this, and I quote, "What do you say to people who might suggest that the next move in rates is actually up, not down?" End quote. Sure, he might just say, "They know nothing." But I bet he says something like this: "We are monitoring all data, but so far we are right to keep rates higher for longer." To me, that's actually enough maybe to get the market back on kilter. So let me give you my bottom line on this odd day. Did we really plunge more than 1% because of the bond market, which stumbled because of a slightly overheated employee cost index number? Or did we really hold out hopes for higher stock prices smack in the middle of earnings season on the seesaw of the 10-year Treasury, which had a slight bump in yield? Or was it simply the end of a rough April where we were often met with selling at the end of the month? Every year, there are people who want to get out ahead of the sell in May and go away crowd. If that's the case, we could right the ship tomorrow if Jay Powell acknowledges some brown shoots. Personally, that's my preferred explanation. Let's take calls. Let's go to David in California. David.
Yes, I'm here, Jim.
Hi, David. What do you got for me?
First of all, thanks very much for all your good works. I'm interested in Robinhood. Buy, sell, or hold?
Okay, Robinhood had this gigantic move up, and it is now pulling back, and I don't think the pullback is finished. The rally occurred in large part because of a big short position. I think we've got to wait and see. I would not wade in. I would not go either way on the stock right now. Okay, listen, every year there are people who want to get out ahead of the sell in May and go away crowd, and that actually is my preferred explanation for today's decline. Not the big jump in yields, because we didn't have one. On Made Money Tonight, there was a glimmer of green in today's sea of red in the form of Restaurant Brands International. I'm hearing how the company behind Popeyes and Burger King is continuing to execute, and that'll be with Executive Chairman Pat Doyle. Then America's Press held an investor day earlier today, so I went straight to the source for an exclusive with the CEO to learn more about how the company keeps hitting it out of the park. And Coca-Cola reported a good quarter today and a tough tape, which sent the stock lower. But was the downward slide warranted? I'm digging into the numbers with the CEO, so stay with Cramer.
Don't Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
On a hideous day, you know what's escaped the gravitational pull of the market? Restaurant Brands International, the quick-serve giant that owns Burger King, Popeyes, Tim Hortons, and Firehouse Subs. This morning, the company reported a fantastic quarter, finishing the day up nearly 3%, real bad tape. That said, it's still down almost 3% for the year. Can it keep climbing? Let's take a close look with Patrick Doyle. He's the turnaround artist, executive chairman of Restaurant Brands International. Find out more. Mr. Doyle, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
All right, so Patrick, you said when you were on last time, look, we're going to remodel stores, we're going to put more money in advertising, and most importantly, you said we're going to reduce customer complaints. You wanted customers to like the places more. Give me on the checklist, how are you doing?
Yeah, we're making good progress, Jim. I mean, it really, the quarter was terrific. We made great progress on a number of fronts. But most importantly, as you said, we've got to be more consistent about execution. So we've got to have better looking stores. We've got to execute in the stores, making great food every time, speed of service. I have to call out Tim's. I mean, they just did an exceptional job. Their speed of service came down yet again. They're getting even faster. They're executing at a high level. They're really the roadmap for what we have to do everywhere, which is great food, served at a good value, give consumers choices kind of up and down the menu, launch some interesting new things, and always do it at a high level of execution. And I think really what you saw this quarter was the brands all doing a pretty good job on that.
Let's talk about Hortons. What in particular, day parts, cold brew, what is really kicking butt there?
Yeah, it was both. This quarter was both morning breakfast as well as PM food. They've done just an exceptional job. So it was really pretty balanced. I think in Canada, we were up about 7.5% on the comp, I think 6.9% blended with the US. And that was really equal amounts, both AM and PM. So interesting new things in the afternoon, cold beverages in the morning. We just continue to be a power up there. We're doing over 70% of the coffee sold in Canada. And with the frequency we've got up there, it's very easy for us to convert those customers that we're getting in the morning into coming back and trying us in the
well,
afternoon.
Well, how about the share take you must be taking from the pathetic Starbucks that I saw this evening?
We are definitely taking some share. In fact, I think we took share really across all of our brands this quarter, except maybe Firehouse.
Right.
But Popeyes, Burger King, and Tim's, I think, all
well,
took share.
I don't want to be too hard on Starbucks. They're obviously having a very tough time right now, and you guys are a beneficiary of it. They've become a shared donor to others. Maybe they can right the ship. Maybe they can't. Let's talk about Popeyes. I see you got a new manager. You're expanding that brand, which I think actually works better overseas. I used to see that when it was an independent company. I was always surprised. Whatever country they went into, it worked. So obviously you've got some grand plans there, too.
Yeah, we sure do. I think we're close to 1,200 restaurants now outside the U.S. I think our comp was mid-teens for Popeyes and international. I mean, it is just booming. It is working most everywhere. Certainly we'll be going to new markets. It takes a little bit of time to work it out, though we launched in New Zealand yesterday, and we had just a phenomenal opening. So we are very excited about Popeyes and what it can do around the world, as well as in the U.S. I mean, we're we're growing at a very fast clip in the U.S., both on comps as well as opening new stores.
All right, now, obviously, we've got to talk about Burger King, $11.5 billion in sales. Look, still good comps. I don't want to get down on it because a competitor, Burger King, is not doing as well in terms of comps as Burger King. But obviously, you're still not happy with how it should be doing.
Yeah, I mean, look, the consumer, as everybody has talked about, the consumer is a little tougher. So things were a little bit more muted, but we felt good. We took share this quarter. You know, it's performing at a high level. And I think the most important thing is all the investments that we've talked about that we're going to be making into this brand, most of that is still on the come. So you've seen elevated levels of advertising, but that's going to continue. You've seen us getting some of the equipment in the kitchens into a better place. That, you know, is going to continue, obviously, to be there and operate with the new equipment. But in terms of the re-images, which is where a lot of that capital is going to go in, that we know is driving good results. When we re-image the restaurants, we're getting kind of a mid-teens sort of a lift. Most of that is still coming. And, you know, we're still under half of the restaurants being our modern image. And over the course of the next 4.5 years, what we announced this morning is we're going to get that to 85 or 90%. And so half of our restaurants coming through getting re-imaged, if we can maintain a double-digit lift on those restaurants as we do it, and we think we're going to be able to do that, that's going to drive terrific results over the next
few years. Oh, no, that'd be huge. But, Pat, let me ask you. You mentioned something. A lot of our viewers are well off. I admit that. There's nothing the matter with doing well in this country. But they're going to hear, well, times are getting tough. And I think that a lot of people don't understand that on a percentage basis, burgers have moved up in price. Now, it's not like you're, you know, people are going to La Bernardin and saying, wait, I got to hold back on the Cristal champagne. But I think there are people at home who are many of our viewers may not understand why there is some sensitivity to burger prices. And you can't just take, you can't double the price of a burger.
No, you sure can't. You sure can't. And you know, look, to me, you've heard me say this many times. The most important thing for traffic in the QSR category is employment. And employment is still pretty darn healthy out there. What you've seen over the course of the last, you know, couple of years is brands had to take a lot of price. Some did it smarter. Some didn't do it quite as well. You know, we think we've got a great menu offering now that has higher end items and kind of entry-level items. So wherever the customer wants to come in and do business with us, we've got a great offering for them. We saw that. We were basically flat on traffic, which was better than the category in the first quarter. But, you know, they certainly felt the price increases of the last couple of years. So I think that muted things a bit. But as long as we're executing and we're pulling lots of other levers than, you know, just doing something crazy from a value perspective, we think we've got an offering that's going to kind of meet the customer for whatever they want to buy and whatever they've got to spend. And as long as they're employed, they should keep coming. We've just got to have something that they're going to look at and say, that's good value for what I want for this meal today.
Well, I want to salute you. You've delivered on everything, as I knew you would, and it's just obviously still work in progress as you get those Burger Kings looking nicer, put some more Popeyes up around the world, and Tim Hortons, what can I say? Operating, hitting on all cylinders, but I know that's probably still not enough for you. Patrick Doyle, Executive Chairman of Restaurant Brands International, and a true turnaround artist in situation. Patrick, I love you being on the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Dan Bunny's back after the break.
Coming up, can this financial stock sustain a recent rally? Take the express ride to Cramer. Next.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
A week and a half ago, American Express reported a breathtakingly great quarter, and since then, the stock's rallied about 8%. Credit quality strong, people are spending big, especially on travel, and the company keeps hitting its ambitious long-term growth targets. Very impressive. Earlier today, American Express hosted an Investor Day event right here in New York, And afterwards, we got to sit down with Chairman and CEO Steve Squeri at his headquarters. Take a look. Steve, it's been 2 years since we got together. Tell me how the company has been transformed since then.
Well, it's great to be with you again. I think, you know, Jim, what we've done over the last few years, and it's not just two, but we've been working at this for the last 6 years, is that, you know, we've really leaned into acquisition. We've accelerated our acquisitions, and a lot of that's due to the value proposition enhancements that we've been doing, which are really critical. We've leaned into millennials and Gen Z. You know, millennials and Gen Z make up a larger part of our business now. In 2019, it was about 19% of our spending. Now it's about 32%.
That's incredible.
And 60%. No, not a long time at all. And 60% of the cards that we're acquiring are millennial and Gen Z. We've increased our marketing investments. And why? Because we see a tremendous opportunity out there to get our card products coverage. And we have virtual parity coverage in the United States, and we continue to make coverage improvements internationally, and that's worked out really well for us. And then the last two things, which more from an expense perspective, our credit numbers continue to be best in class. The gap continues to widen to our competition, and we're still below pre-pandemic levels of 2019. And the way we fund our receivables now, 70% of our funding now comes from personal savings. So that's a lower cost of funding for us, which actually then helps our profitability.
Right, definitely. The gross margins were terrific. You want to go back to something you said about the millennials and Gen Z. My generation, I get out of college. All I want to do is get an American Express card. It's a little too hard to get. I finally get one in 1981. Proud member since 81. It was prestige. Now it's almost a necessity among young people. How did you make it so that people feel without it, I can't do what I want to do?
Well, thank you for 1981, same year I got the card. But, you know, I think what happened for us is that we realized that going after millennials and Gen Z was a key thing for us. We used to go after them with a no-fee card, but a no-fee card didn't have a lot of benefits. That's why you paid no fee for it. And so what millennials and Gen Zs and what we realized was that they wanted access. They wanted experiences. They wanted to get special privileges. And when you look at the cards that are really out there for millennials and Gen Z, which is the gold card and the platinum card, which is what 60% of acquisition is right now, they want this card because it helps them live their lives. And they look at the price that they pay, but the value that they get is so much more. So when you look at a platinum card holder who's spending, you know, $695 and maybe getting $1,400 of value, it's a no-brainer for them. And so having that fee-based card for them was critical. The other points I'd like to make on this is that when we get a millennial, and we just showed this at our investor day today, if you go back 4 or 5 years ago, they now spend twice as much as they did 5 years ago on that card because we're growing with them as they grow through their lives. The other thing is the average life we predict for these millennials will be over 20 years.
So in other words, the lifetime value of a millennial is huge versus someone who is 50, 60.
Yeah, and so if you look at acquiring a Gen Xer or a baby boomer right now, and we're not opposed to acquiring baby boomers and Gen Xers, but the lifetime value is going to be 2x. And the lifespan that we're going to have with that card member is going to be much greater.
Now, how do you know what to offer? It seems like you have an uncanny sense of what people in their 20s and 30s want. But that's not you. What is it, artificial intelligence, young people, smart people you hire?
Well, I got a lot of smart people. It's certainly not me, that I could tell you. But we got a lot of smart people that we hire. And I think the most important thing that we've learned is you've got to listen to your customer. And we spend a lot of time listening to our customer. Our customers, our most valuable asset that we have in addition to our colleagues. But by listening to our customers and anticipating their needs, and then by creating cohorts of those customers, again, using artificial intelligence to determine then how do you target market those customers has really helped us. But that value proposition development for us is really listening to our customers.
All right, so what are they doing? We know restaurants, year-over-year growth, 8, lodging, 5. I mean, airlines, people are going, others, 11%. We got to talk about this because sometimes I think, geez, either the consumer is so hot that the Fed should worry about it, or it's just you've got whatever dollar amount that people spend is yours.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, consumer grew at 8%, which is a good number. You know, it obviously grew a lot more, a couple of years ago. But I think, you know, what's happened here is you've got a bifurcated economy. And that bifurcated economy with the premium end, which is what we have, we focus on that premium end, and there's still a lot of discretionary spending. And, you know, when you think about even millennials now, you know, the last quarter, millennials grew 15%. Millennial and Gen Z grew 15% for the last two quarters. They're used to using their card everywhere all the time.
Right.
Because, you know, when you think about when you and I started using the card, Amex wasn't accepted everywhere.
No.
But when you think about someone who's acquired the card in the last 6 or 7 years, Amex is accepted everywhere. And so they're using the card now for everyday purchases. In fact, those under 35 do 70% more transactions in restaurants than our other cohorts.
Now, a lot of people feel, well, wait a second, it's 10% growth, how to continue? I look at what you could do in international growth, which people don't realize, you still don't have the penetration you could get.
Right, so if you look at our top five markets in international, we only have 6% market share. But yet, our international consumer grew 14% in billings last quarter, and small business grew 13%. And small business internationally is really a nascent market. And so as we continue to increase coverage, as we continue to drive value, I think international is a huge growth opportunity for us.
Now, let's talk about the new things that you're giving. I mean, for instance, Centurion. How do you know that's not going to cost you too much? How do you figure out what people really want and it doesn't hurt your bottom line?
Yeah. So, you know, look, we're putting in a new lounge in Newark.
Gigantic.
It's a gigantic 17,000 square foot lounge. But, you know, if you think about the New York area, we need a lounge in Newark.
Yes.
And we've worked on that a long time. And we're happy to have that launch in the near future. But we need to continue adding value. But I think, you know, Jim, the key thing is we've increased our scale so much. And so when you go back to the growth plan that we had, that growth plan was all about increasing our scale. By increasing our scale, it gave us more degrees of freedom to make those investments. The other thing that we've done is our operating expenses. From 2017 to 2023, operating expenses were 30% as a percent of revenue in 2017. It's now down to 25%. So that gives us the leverage to invest back into the business, to acquire more card members, and to put more services and add more value for our cardholders.
All right, so I have a new thing. How about Resy? How's that working out for you?
Resy's working out great. You know, I mean, you have a restaurant. How's it working out for you?
Well, Resy is how you get people.
Right.
What
and so,
I say?
And I think, you know, what Resy was a great acquisition for us because what it did, it addressed the needs of two constituents. It addressed the needs of our cardholders, and it addressed the needs of restaurateurs. And so what we're able to do, and it's an open platform.
Right.
So what we're able to do is not only provide value to our cardholders, but we're able, because it is an open platform, to attract other non-cardholders who may want to consider becoming card members.
Right. Now, you are widening the gap considerably against other cards. What's the secret there?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at widening the gap, we're not resting on our laurels.
Right.
We're continuing to invest in this business, which is why I think when you look at our growth plan, you know, people say to me, well, geez, why don't, you know, you exceeded in the first quarter. Well, we may have exceeded, you know, sort of analyst expectations,
right.
But
right.
Those weren't in my,
right.
When I put my plan together, I didn't put analyst expectations into my plan. But we're right on track with our plan, and we continue to invest. And so we have a revenue target, which allows us to grow our scale, and we have that EPS target. So we're balancing those two. But we are investing in more value right. propositions, we're investing in more access, we're investing in more technology, and that creates more value and allows us to widen that gap.
Well, I have to, everything is working. I mean, this is full speed ahead. That last quarter was great. Actually, ever since you took over, it's just a new company. And congratulations to you and to the people who work for you.
Well, it's the people that work for me. I mean, it's the 75,000 people that work in American Express. When you have a problem and you pick up that phone and call, or you get on and chat, those are the people that make the magic happen.
Those are real people, by the way. It's
those
not
are
a bot,
real people,
right? Because last time I looked.
Those are real people, and they make the magic happen for us.
Well, it is happening. It's Steve Squeries, America's Best Chairman and CEO. Wow.
Thank you.
Just
thanks.
Great. Thank
good
you so much.
You. Thanks.
Coming up, can ticker symbol KO deliver a knockout for your portfolio? Cramer cracks open a convo with Coca-Cola. Fresh off earnings. Next.
This is really important. I don't want you to let today's ugly tape scare you away from some great earnings stories. Take Coca-Cola, which reported an excellent beat and raise quarter this morning. But because the whole market got slammed, the stock actually went down. It should have gone up. It's absurd. Don't take it from me. Let's check in with James Quincy. He's the chairman and CEO of the Coca-Cola company to learn more about the quarter and what comes next. Mr. Quincy, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be back, Jim.
All right, so James, you put up a really good quarter, and I know a lot of people were saying, well, wait a second, you got this great organic growth, double digit, but it's all because of price. I'm looking at it some way differently. I'm saying, you know what, you've got products that people want, and they don't seem to be deterred at all by price, even though I know you don't wish that you constantly have to put through price increases. Do you think that's a better way to look at it than just say, it doesn't matter, it's just price?
Yeah, look, I think the easiest way to think about it is to split it into a couple of pieces. There's a few markets that are a single-digit bit of our business which have very high inflation, and they're all mixed together in the average of the headline. But when you look at the underlying core business, what you see in the first quarter is a continuation of the last 5 years, which is really a balanced contribution from volume growth and from price mix. And so what you're seeing is a healthy growth of the portfolio franchise and also a capture of that through top-line-led profit growth.
And I think it's safe to say that that's not a domestic affair. That seems to be going international, particularly even Latin America.
Yeah, look, over in the quarter and actually for several years, Latin America has been very strong on the volume and the price side. Actually, there's been broad-based volume growth around the world. India has been a standout over the last number of years, a little less this quarter, but bouncing back again. So there's some real strength in the emerging markets. And so even volume growth in places in Europe and the Japans and Australias of the world. So there's growth in the emerging markets, and there's some modest growth in the developed economies, too.
Yeah, it's funny. Eli Lilly reported today, and they've got these GLP-1 drugs, and they're supposed to help people lose weight. I think they help people drink more Coke. I really have not been able to figure a correlation at all. One thing is definite, which is they certainly drink more Diet Coke, in my favor, Coke Zero. Could there be some crazy correlation?
I don't know. It's very early days, Jim. Certainly the anecdotal evidence is there's a little shift in what they drink, from alcohol a little more to non-alcoholic drinks. And certainly, you know, Diet Coke and Coke Zero do well in the very little data that's out there, along with actually stuff like our Fairlife protein milks and things like that. So it's not, I don't think, necessarily going to be a negative overall picture for a non-alcoholic beverage business like ours, even if there's some shifts within the portfolio. But certainly Coke Zero posted another very strong quarter of growth.
All right, now you are a bit of a mind reader, I think, because I've got in front of me Core Power High Protein Milkshake Vanilla Fairlife. Is this something that I should be drinking after I work out?
Absolutely, Jim. Look, if I have a good workout, I have one of those Core Powers. Four gulps and you're done. It's delicious. Try it. You can go for the strawberry or the vanilla. I think there's a chocolate one as well. They're great. I mean, and they're really on fire.
Well, what do I do with my Powerade and Body Arm?
Well, they're different needs. I mean, the rehydration and the electrolyte is the kind of the sports drink side, particularly some of the Body Armor ones, along with Powerade. I like the Body Armor light one with the coconut water. But that's more rehydration and electrolytes. And the Core Power is really a low lactose concentration of milk protein, which is kind of more the recovery. And so that's really what's going on there. Well, and they're both doing well.
I will certainly give it a try. But the one I really want is this Coke Spice. Now, I happen to like spicy rum and Coke. Does this get it without the rum? What is Coke spiced?
I think it's an attempt here in the U.S. to bring something different that we've tried on an in and out basis. I don't think it'll give you the punch without the rum, but it's certainly a very interesting addition to the Coke franchise to bring new news and really Coke Spiced and some of these Coke creations, which have been a bit more interesting and different. It's all about bringing more relevance and having people re-engage with a version of the Coca-Cola trademark. But then what tends to happen is over time, they come back to Coke Original Taste or Coke Zero.
All right, so where are people buying Coke? I mean, are they buying it at lunch at McDonald's? Are they buying it at home? Are they buying it at the supermarket? Are they, when I say at home, are they ordering through Amazon? I've got my, just, you know, I have my energy drinks on subscription because I don't want to run out. And that's how I, you know, I don't ever have to think about it. Where is the preferred venue to purchase Coke?
Well, the great news actually about the Coke business is it's everywhere. I mean, the old idea is we wanted to be within an arm's reach of desire. So when you look at the channel distribution of the Coke business, it's half the sales go through a channel that you would call for consumption at home, and half are for the away from home channels. But even those are then fragmented down. You know, the at home ones, whether it's the supermarkets or the e-commerce or the mom and pop stores through convenience, all the way to all different types of restaurants, amusement, leisure, cruises, travel. We are incredibly broad-based in distribution, which is why it's always there to be able to be enjoyed at the moment's notice.
It does seem everywhere. Now, at what point can we have a call where we do not have to start with inflation and price? Are we near that level? Is it almost to the point where things are under control and we don't have to worry about continually worried about whether the consumer can afford a can of Coke?
Yeah, in the majority of the markets, the 90%+ of the markets, I think we're going to see normalized inflation by the end of the year. It's certainly in that landing zone already. Certainly in our numbers, you do see this kind of elevated price mix given the very small number of countries, but with very high inflation, where they're working out much larger macroeconomic problems, Argentina and countries with those sorts of scale of problems. But the rest of the world is very much landing back in the zone of a normalized pricing environment. Whoa. So I think that'll be what we're talking about by the end of the year.
Oh, my God, would that be positive. Now, the DEA, Drug Administration, came out today and said, listen, they don't want people to be... And they don't want to send people to jail anymore on cannabis. A long time ago, I mentioned cannabis to you. You said you're always open-minded. It wasn't top of mind. Does it ever make sense to even experiment with a cannabis-infused Coca-Cola?
I'm not sure we want to mess with the core Coca-Cola trademark with many things. I haven't seen the latest DEA news. I mean, at the end of the day, ingredients in food and beverages are regulated by the FDA. And, you know, we are open-minded about what ingredients we'd consider in our portfolio. But, the various derivatives of the cannabis have not yet crossed the threshold of any sort of approval by the FDA. So I think it's really a long way away from a federal point of view.
Okay, and at the beginning, there was the only negative in the whole darn conference call was you said that North America, it started out weaker for the quarter and then came on strong. Was that just weather? You didn't mention whether it was weather or not, but it did make me concerned that something could be awry at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think what happened, actually, whether it was North America or Europe, is it softened a little. The economy softened a little into the back end of the year. And I think that's in those countries typically masked by people's focus on Christmas and the holiday season. So I think it started a little softer in January. And there was some quite strong weather, winter weather in both those parts of the world. So I think it just started a little softer. But then it normalized through the quarter and we saw a good March. Of course, Easter was a little earlier in the calendar this year versus last year. So I think it was just a combination of things, but again, all at the margin, not
right.
A big shift.
All right, and the last thing, you did mention that you think that GLP-1 has influenced liquor. I know it has. I know it has because I see the data, and the only thing that hasn't snapped back from GLP-1 is, frankly, Brown-Forman, Jack Daniel's, stock all the way down. You have that Jack and Coke. Is that not doing as well given the fact that liquor doesn't seem to taste as well for people under GLP-1?
Actually, the pre-mixed Jack and Coca-Cola that we've been selling in the U.S. and a whole number of countries has done really well, certainly doing better than our expectations and Brown-Forman's expectations. So we're very happy with it. I think the GLP-1 stuff is very early days in terms of mass scale, but certainly we're happy with where we've got to with the pre-mixed alcohol drinks, the Jack and Coke, and that certainly looks like an attractive addition for us.
Wow. Well, look, I don't know. It seems all systems going. If the stock market hadn't been down, I think your stock would have been up maybe a buck or two, certainly ahead of when we see Warren Buffett sip some this weekend at the Grand Poobah Festival that he's got. James Quincy is the chairman and CEO of Coca-Cola. James, thank you so much for coming on Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim.
Mad Money will be back here.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The Lightning Round is up next.
Chris, everybody, it's Rob Girls. Let me say this. Stock is settled by myself. We're dominating the call, so we're going to play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Kramer, everybody, let's start with Fair in Maryland. Fair.
Hello, first time caller, long time listener since the Cumber and Kramer days. As an investment club member, I want to thank you for your diligence and foresight. My question relates to Trade Desk. Is their digital platform really working?
Oh, sure. Well, it absolutely is working. It's doing fantastically, and Jeff Green is doing a remarkable job, and a lot of people prefer it to Google. So I will tell you that even though it's a very expensive stock, it is a good stock, and I would not sell it. I'm more inclined to buy it below the 80 level. Thank you for the kind comments of the club. I feel that I let club members down today, both on Starbucks and GE Healthcare. I play with an open hand. When something's good, I say it. This is something bad. Let's go to Nancy in New York. Nancy.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I am good. How about you, Nancy?
I'm good. So I'm calling in on a healthcare stock called Edwards Life Sciences. They created the aortic valve replacement years ago, and now they have a pulmonary replacement valve. And I'm just curious to see what your opinion is.
Oh, I like this. The new product line is very good. The stock is pulling back here. That may be the right level to buy it. They are doing very well now. Let's go to Jorge in California. Jorge.
Yeah, Delta Airlines, Jimmy.
I like Delta very much. I actually have to prefer. I have to tell you, I like it. I like United, too. I think they're both good. Now, remember, they're very inexpensive stocks, but they trade wildly. But I do like Delta. Let's go to Michael in Tennessee. Michael.
Woo! Booyah! Woo! Daddy.
Booyah!
With the top of the banner with the next 5-10 years, what do you think about FCX? Freeport-McMoran.
I want it to come in first. It's been straight up. I do not like parabolic moves, and it has had one. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, what pin action can investors expect from the weight loss drugs? Which sectors may need to tighten their belts? Next.
How much do we know about the stock market fallout from Eli Lilly's revolutionary weight loss drug, Zepbound? Yeah, a lot less than we thought we did. Sure, we know it changes your brain chemistry to reduce all kinds of cravings to the point where you can lose 18% of your body weight if you take the stuff. But we still can't figure out which companies are getting hurt by this juggernaut. Surely somebody is, right? And we know that one person 60 takes these GLP-1 drugs, meaning the ones from Lilly and Novo Nordisk. We know the market's growing. Lilly put up amazing numbers today, raising its full-year revenue forecast by an astounding $2 billion. CEO David Ricks said that they're doing their best to make enough of the drug, but it's hard to keep up. According to Ricks, the demand is very strong. And each week, hundreds of thousands of people fill scripts for Mounjaro and Zepbound. Mounjaro is being, of course, the diabetes version of the drug. Now, Ricks expects Lilly will be able to boost production substantially in the second half, which will make it easier to get a hold of the stuff. But it's no wonder Lilly's stock finished up $43 or almost 6% in a really ugly day. In terms of the impact from the GLP-1s on the other stocks and other industries, though, I'm beginning to believe we don't have a clue. When these drugs first came on the scene, all sorts of stocks just got crushed. They were annihilated. I mean, from the food companies that make people fat, medical companies, device companies that help various elements of obesity. I mean, anything that was even remotely connected. I mean, yet most of that action turned out to be dead wrong. Last night we spoke to ResMed, which makes CPAP machines for people with sleep apnea. We've heard that GLP-1 can help treat sleep apnea. But ResMed CEO Mick Farrell has plenty of data showing that the two treatments work great together. It's a big reason why his stock's up 24% for the year. We heard that Abbott's diabetes management franchise will be hurt by GLP-1, but the company has seen no decline in sales from this new class of drugs. Again, Abbott says they're complementary. They're doing even better. And in fact, the GLP-1s have helped sales of their blood sugar monitors because people want to know how this stuff, whether it's working. Plus, they're selling protein shakes to help offset the muscle you lose when you take Lilly's weight loss drug. I believe these things are complementary, but when you're on the GLP-1s, you're more health conscious. Maybe that's what it is. Why don't you take the plunge into a Zepbound or its companion from Novo Nordisk, Ozempic? Why not go all the way to treat your body right? I mean, maybe that's what it is. When the packaged food companies reported, they said they've seen some interest in smaller portion control bags, which they think might be coming from GLP dashboards, but maybe not. Coca-Cola saw a pickup in diet drinks, but as far as the tie-in to Louis drugs, again, inconclusive. Today we heard from the restaurant chains, not one has seen a decline related to these drugs. Only one food group has seen a big decline during this period, and that's liquor, hard liquor, which apparently is being hurt badly. But the liquor companies have said over and over again it has nothing to do with the GLP-1s, even as there's strong evidence that these drugs also reduce cravings for alcohol. They don't even want to acknowledge the threat from cannabis, either, although it may change with the DEA today recommending cannabis be considered a less dangerous drug, and that's an important step toward full legalization. It's hard to believe, but I can only conclude that, at least so far, the rise of GLP-1s has only really hurt the alcohol business. Maybe one day these weight loss drugs will grow to the point where they wreck the whole food industry. But I'm beginning to think that people on Zepbound or Ozempic may still order food. They may still buy food. They just can't finish as much as they used to, at least for now. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.